Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Alex Orr, and I'm with Apt Associates. I was the deputy project director on the project that I'll be discussing today, and I have no relationships to disclose. So again, thanks for joining today. This is a great opportunity. Today we're going to be discussing the background of HIV infection and awareness of status among men who have sex with men, also known as MSM. Today we'll review the goals of a CDC-funded HIV testing initiative and the research questions that the presentation today is going to address. We'll present the results from analyses and discuss conclusions and implications. So just some background, most everyone in this room is probably aware, but HIV is still a significant health issue in the United States. Although we have an estimated 1.2 million persons are living with HIV infection, it's estimated that nearly 13% of them are unaware of their infection. In fact, one national study in 2011 found that among MSM tested and interviewed, those who tested HIV positive, 33% were unaware of their HIV positive status. Furthermore, we know that African American and Hispanic MSM are far less likely to know their HIV status. So given this, we understand that HIV testing itself is a critical first step in identifying infection and receiving life-saving medical treatment. So some background on MTI. In 2011, CDC funded Apt Associates to implement the MSM testing initiative, also known as MTI, to reach MSM with undiagnosed HIV infection. We provided free, often rapid HIV testing services through a consortium of 36 testing and linkage partners across 25 cities in the United States and Puerto Rico. Testing activities just completed this past June on the project. The goals of the initiative itself were to identify 3,000 MSM with previously undiagnosed infection and link at least 85% of those individuals into medical care. To be eligible for MTI, participants had to report being assigned male sex at birth, have had sex with another male, oral or anal, in their lifetime, and report an unknown or HIV negative status. Transgender women were included in this initiative, and throughout the presentation, participants include both MSM and transgender women. Finally, participants for this testing initiative were recruited and reached through one of five distinct recruitment strategies, and I'll go into more detail on what those strategies were a little bit later. So again, the testing initiative gave us a really unique opportunity to learn about MSM and transgender women electing to take an HIV test. For this presentation, we sought to describe the characteristics of participants who indicated that they have never in their lifetime had a prior HIV test. We were also interested in learning which venues these participants were found and which MTI recruitment strategies participants were likely to be tested through. And as I noted earlier, finding individuals with who have never been tested for HIV, particularly those at risk for HIV, is a national priority. So as such, this presentation focuses only on testing history, and we're not going to go into HIV prevalence or linkage to care right now. So some background on the methods here. Demographic and risk behavior questions were ascertained during the testing sessions. Any individual that indicated yes or no to the questions about previous HIV test were included in the analyses. Responses left blank, don't know, declined, or not asked were excluded. The Cochrane-Mantel-Hasnell test was utilized for all analyses here, except for the comparisons among the various recruitment strategies where we used an unadjusted T-test. And finally, all data being reported today should be considered preliminary, just a FYI. So, into the good stuff here. The primary outcomes of the project overall, we found and we tested 71,322 individuals that were eligible for the initiative, and we found 2,241 previously undiagnosed HIV infection, yielding a 3.1 positivity rate. Of those newly diagnosed individuals, we linked 1,546 into HIV medical care. That's about nearly 70% of those who were found positive. We linked them within 90 days of their diagnosis. So our total sample of MTI participants that responded either yes or no to previous HIV tests is 70,627. We excluded records, again, that were left blank or don't know. Of those, 8% of the population indicated that they had never previously been tested for HIV. Remember, these are all individuals who have reported that they've never had, or that they've had sex with another man in their lifetime. Looking at the demographics here, we found that individuals who were Black, African American, Hispanic, or other were more likely to indicate that they had never previously been tested for HIV compared to their white, non-Hispanic counterparts. Furthermore, individuals who were less than 25 years old were significantly more likely to report that they had never been previously tested for HIV in their lifetime. These findings are consistent with the current literature and reiterate a continued need to target young minority MSM for HIV testing. So as I mentioned before, we recruited individuals through several recruitment strategies listed here. Venue-based testing was a strategy that recruited and tested MSM at a variety of venues popular with MSM, including but not limited to storefronts, medical clinics, parks, bars, clubs, circuit parties, pride festivals, pageants and balls, you name it, we were there doing testing. The majority of testing was done through this component, as you can see, about 95% of our entire population was tested through it. We also did testing through at-home internet testing, also known as iTest at Home. This strategy allowed eligible men to order HIV test kits through a website, and participants used those kits to provide a dried blood spot that was mailed back and processed, and results were provided over the phone. We did couples voluntary counseling and testing, CVCT, which gave men the opportunity to test and receive the results as a couple. We did testing events across America, as we called it TIA here, and that strategy funded large-scale episodic testing events that were kind of irregular and scattered across the country. And then finally, social network strategy, or SNS, enlisted men to recruit members of their social network for HIV testing. So among some of our smaller strategies here, you can see iTest at Home, TIA, and SNS. A significant amount of individuals reported never previously testing for HIV. While all of those are significant, what I'll point out and what stands out here, to me at least, is that 36% from iTest at Home, the web-based component that allowed participants to have an HIV test delivered discreetly to their home, nearly 36% reported that they had never previously had an HIV test in their lifetime. This may be attributed to the fact that iTest at Home was available to individuals from any region across the United States who could order the discrete tests. We reviewed the regions of the country where these test kits were being ordered, and we found that many test kits were sent to more rural regions of the country where our MTI components were not being conducted, and also where traditionally there have been fewer HIV resources offered. So, as a consequence of venue-based testing here, circled, having the vast majority of tests, we use the data just from this strategy to further explore the venues that were most successful at finding MSM that had never been tested for HIV in their lifetime. So now we're going to go in and look a little bit at the places where folks were found. So we now have an N of 5,139 participants who indicated that they were never previously tested for HIV, again, within that venue-based recruitment strategy. Here we dichotomize the venues into either clinical testing sites, such as community health centers, federally qualified health centers, or other centers that provided comprehensive medical services, and non-clinical sites, which included storefronts, bars, parks, and community centers. So using non-clinical sites as a reference group, we see here that those presenting for testing and clinical testing sites were significantly more likely to report that they had never previously had an HIV test in their lifetime, so 8.2% compared to 7.6%. As you can see, however, a majority of our tests were conducted through non-clinical sites. So to further explore the testing history among those within the non-clinical sites category here, we wanted to see what the differences were among the subcategories. So now we're looking at the subcategories within non-clinical testing sites. You'll see that the categories here were that were more likely to find individuals never previously testing for HIV were at community settings. That's about 13.8% compared to 7.1% at bars and clubs, which was the reference group for this analysis. Community settings for this project included testing locations that are open to the general population and are not necessarily catering towards the MSM community. So for MTI, most community settings included schools, universities, commercial facilities, drop-in centers for youth, substance abuse support groups, shelters, and other various social organizations. So this suggests that venue-based testing, as we traditionally see it, going to bars and clubs or streets and parks, may not be as successful at finding those who have never been previously tested for HIV when compared to the non-gay identified venues within community settings. Perhaps those who have never tested for HIV are more likely to test when organizations are conducting outreach at non-gay identified venues within the community. So looking back at just the results to summarize, over 4 years of testing through MTI, we found 8% of our population had never been tested for HIV in their lifetime, despite being sexually active with another man. Black, African American, Hispanic, and other MSM were more likely to report no previous HIV tests, as well as young MSM under the age of 25. These results, again, are consistent with surveillance data and in the literature surrounding the high-risk communities. Participants that were tested via iTest at Home, social network strategy, and testing events across America were significantly more likely to report no previous HIV tests compared to those recruited with other venue-based testing activities. But more surprisingly, we found that MSM recruited testing in community settings were more likely to report no previous HIV tests compared to the more traditional sites like bars and clubs. So there should still be a great concern with getting high-risk individuals such as MSM and transgender women to take their first HIV test. CDC recommends doing this annually for those at high risk. Testing initiatives should continue to target young minority individuals, and outreach and recruitment efforts outside of traditional venue-based testing should consider comprehensive and novel approaches and not just rely on kind of that low-hanging fruit at bars and clubs as we know it. And in addition, recruitment through smaller but higher resource heavy strategies such as TIA, SNS, and iTest at Home, again, that web-based component, could potentially reach significant numbers of previously untested individuals. So I just want to acknowledge my co-authors here, a couple of whom are in the room with me today. The MTI partners, again, 36 organizations across 25 cities. A big thank you to CDC for funding this, and of course, we could not have done it without the 71,322 individuals who trusted us to take their HIV tests. Thank you.
Thanks to all of our presenters. Now we have some time for questions, so if you please raise your hand. Yes, sir.
I have a question for the last presenter. In one of your slides, you said that the percentage of people never tested might have been higher. But when you look at the absolute number, you see that the traditional effect where we test, we were able to recruit far more people who never tested.
Right.
In terms of sheer numbers, even though that the non-traditional places might have had a larger percentage and still didn't recruit that many people.
Right.
So I was just wondering if you could maybe move on to your conclusions.
Yeah.
Can't give up all that traditional stuff. I mean, we have to innovate, sure, but can't stop doing what we're already doing.
Right. And that really kind of hones in on a question that we had and an issue throughout the life of the project was volume versus high risk. And so going to bars and clubs, sure, we can bring in, thousands and thousands of people as you did, but you drop your prevalence rate and you might not be finding that high risk level. I think the purpose of the presentation today is when you're really looking for that needle in the haystack, you might have to move to more resource-heavy approaches to find individuals who have never in their lifetime been tested for HIV rather than kind of that low-hanging fruit. And it's something that we definitely had to balance throughout the project. And we had very high goals that we had to meet and make sure that we, keep the funder happy.
Thank you, everybody, for the question. Yes.
Do you have any data on positivity
rates
by recruitment
strategies? CDC has that data.
They will. Did you notice anything like particular value?
So as far as like positivity rates among the different recruitment strategies, I believe social network strategy had the highest positivity rate, but again, it had probably the lowest recruitment numbers. So with kind of that balance of resource-heavy strategies versus, the easier approach of doing some big testing.
It doesn't surprise me that the eye test at home test was more prevalent, particularly in rural communities. It also didn't surprise me that in terms of finding the number of people who had never been tested, that they came out of testing facts that were community-based versus, for example, your parties and events like that. But I was wondering, in terms of those, community settings where traditional, they were just basically offering community outreach and you found that there were more people who had reported never testing before. Was that also in more rural communities where there's like community outreach, just sort of event versus an urban community where is more likely to be more of the types of testing events that are targeted in those medical communities.
Right. So the recruitment through this project was primarily done in urban settings. I honestly can't think of many. We did have a site in Birmingham, but that's probably about as rural as it gets. But I agree. I mean, with the community settings, I think you are. It didn't surprise me necessarily that we found so many of individuals who were never previously tested because it was way outside of that traditional, maybe, disconnected with the gay community and you're not seeing trust at gay bars on a regular basis, and this is kind of a novel thing. But I think you're right that, perhaps we should put more emphasis in those rural communities to define this population.
I would just like to say that I am a pastor, and this young man is speaking about Birmingham, but I'm about 135 miles south, between Montgomery and Selma, Alabama. And the church that I pastor, when people come into my vestibule, there is a large table with all the HIV information on cancer, but mostly and mainly is HIV information that, you know, the people can pick it up. They don't have to talk to me. Although I've done education work in HIV, and plus I'm certified to do testing, but we are in the Bible Belt where stigma is still a great project, a problem. And today I'm with the University of Alabama. We have a project faith that we are dealing with stigma. And in the church is where a person ought to be able to receive information about HIV or any project, because in the civil rights movement was because the minister stood up and they spoke about the issue of segregation, and they were speaking about racism. And so, you know, when it came over the pulpit, the people will listen. And that's the way I feel about HIV/AIDS, that in the church that where I pastor, there's no limitation, because I do have people in my congregation that are HIV positive, but the thing is, it's not about me. The thing is that I, as a pastor, ought to have a concern to get them into care. Now, when you think about a care facility from the little town of Hainesville, Alabama, where I am, it's about 40 to 45 miles. But we just got a satellite center put in Lowndes County of Hainesville, where I live, and that way many of the clients do not have to go all the way to Montgomery to get tested, nor do they have to go all the way to Selma, Alabama, because there are so many issues of transportation and money. One of the things you were saying, that the need to get a ministry in a church is not necessarily money. That's a cop out. Because I say it's not necessarily money, just have people with a passion or heart to care for those that are infected. One of the things I tell many people, I say, we all HIV positive. You're reminding this whole room where I am right now. It's HIV positive one way or the other. And instead of helping in you or healing you, you're HIV positive. But the thing is that we are concerned. We all have a concern, and we should connect ourselves with the rural community and faith-based to do a better job. We need to talk to our senator, our representatives, in-state and out-of-state, in order that we will get funding, you know, to better the living for those who are infected.
Can I just respond?
Oh, yes, sorry.
Thank you for your comments very much. I appreciate those. And, you know, really what we're doing is trying to figure out how to provide those resources, where the greatest needs are, and then what those resources should look like so that they're provided not just HIV resources, but also that they're culturally competent and that they are built for the faith-based community, right, so that the messages reflect the values of the community as well. So thank you for your comments.
In one of your slides, Mr. Olmstead, you were able to indicate that some of the students tested positive. You were able to link them to care. Mm-hmm. You still have a number of people that were not linked to care. Mm-hmm. Is there any position to study why you were able to connect them to care? Because they are still what are the reasons why you're not connected to care?
partners as to why they were having difficulties linking people to care. I could do a whole other panel on that itself, but I think primarily it was readiness to link competing priorities within the population itself. You know, individuals were not necessarily thinking about HIV medical treatment. It's nothing physically wrong with them quite yet. They were really concerned about other, you know, social issues. And then lack of, when you're doing that much venue-based outreach on streets with mobile units and whatnot, it is difficult to establish rapport with your clients and obtain accurate contact information to get them to come back in for a medical appointment later. So that was a really huge barrier when you are doing that much street outreach on a regular basis, you know, to get that many people to come back in. But again, we had about a 70% increase in care rate overall.
More questions or comments? This is a good question. Yes.
I have a question for Dr. Veronica. How were you able to provide parents for them to, like, for the use of participating in the program?
Well, the way that it was done for this particular study, because it was a national dissemination, it was basically as if they were given the test, and so we didn't get consent from the adolescents because we had the questionnaires would be identified. And so the only thing we knew about their particular questionnaire is the teacher that they had. And so we had to get consent from the teachers but not the students. And so that's why I said with the follow-up, they weren't longitudinal, that we couldn't connect each questionnaire to the follow-up questionnaire. So no, we did not need their consent. So basically, it was as if they were given a chapter test or a unit test for that particular classroom, because it was done in their health classes.
Any other questions or comments?
For the faith-based organization, was there preliminary data to determine what particular religious affiliation? So I know with minorities, there's typically a lot of Christian Catholic influence, but have you found that there's not really need to try to find Jewish or Muslim or atheist populations?
So the way Project Faith was designed is that organizations apply to be part of Project Faith. We have had one Muslim organization during the time period for Project Faith, but for this particular survey, it was all Christian religions. I don't know of a lot of African-American Jewish faith-based organizations in South Carolina, for example. But yeah, it's open to anybody. We did have one Muslim mosque, so thank you, involved. That's actually why we say faith-based organization instead of church, or we use house of worship to be inclusive, that every faith-based organization is not a church.
Thank you. And follow up on that, are there any studies that look at NSN and discuss or ask them what their religious affiliation is? Do we know what that is specifically, or?
That I do not know. I don't know if anybody else.